newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such...
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis on what is going on in the news media these days. There's a lot to talk about there, always, and a window into newsroom decision-making with some veteran journalists. I'm Rex Smith, formerly editor of the Times Union, now of The Upstate American. And I'm here with Judy Patrick, the vice president of the New York Press Association, former editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady.
Yeah, they gave me the short chair today, so I'm sitting on the floor, practically. Yeah.
But we'll hear you very well through that microphone, see, because you're so close to it. Barbara Lombardi. Bardo is here, formerly the executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record.
Sitting pretty. Happy to be here.
Excellent. Thank you. And also teaches at UAlbany. And David Gustina, producer of the Media Project, morning host on WAMC. David.
Hello. I'm in the high chair today because I'm the youngest of the three.
And David also teaches at UAlbany.
That's correct.
Yeah, Professor Gustina, my goodness.
And by the way, Rex, we could mention something here, and Barbara, I think you'll be happy about this. The College of St. Rose, which we have talked about, has gone by the wayside. They have closed.
We're not happy about that.
We mourn.
But they are auctioning off all of their broadcast equipment. And I was over there representing the University at Albany and WAMC, and we got to look at some equipment. We might be bringing more... much more to the student body at University of Albany.
How great would that be?
I hope that happens. I knew that some of you were going over there to look at the goods, and I was hoping you'd bring some stuff home.
You know, there's a downside to getting somebody's old stuff, however. When I was a student many, many years ago at Columbia Journalism School, we had the cast-offs from CBS News Professor Fred Friendly had been the former president of CBS News. So I was the last class that produced a documentary film with 16-millimeter black and white film. That was old technology, let me tell you.
But it's still, it's so much better to be able to offer the students the actual equipment, that they can use to give them the experience, the real broadcasting experience, as close as we can get at a major university.
Cool. Very cool. All right. Well, we haven't had a time around these microphones with this little group since the epical debate. And we need to talk about that. And I'd like some top line thoughts first from people about how you feel about the moderators, the journalists involved. What do we think about Jake Tapper and Dana Bash? How did she do?
I think that Dana did better than Jake because there were a couple of instances, at least during the debate, where she asked a question of Trump, and Trump, as a politician, and especially Trump would do, doesn't answer the question. And when he took a pause, she said, well, the question was, and she repeated the question, and with a yes or no, trying to get a yes or no answer. So that was something that I think the moderators would have a responsibility to do.
That's a good thing.
I didn't hear Jake Tapper do that at all. I know that they had pre-agreed with the parties involved that they weren't going to do fact-checking. So that kind of puts them into a... Right.
Think about that. How would you go about fact-checking in real time in debate with that many questions being asked?
Right. I almost thought maybe they could do a crawl along the bottom with different facts. I thought the Dana Bash follow-up question about the actual question asked was the one brief shining moment for the moderators. Otherwise, they were very good at reading well-crafted questions off cards. I mean, that's basically what they were. I mean, we could have had a robot reading those questions.
And AI. And
yeah, because that's essentially what they were doing.
But David, speak to this. I think a lot of listeners will say, yeah, but the role of the media is to ask questions and let the candidates say what they will. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, well, but the media is also supposed to speak truth to power, hold people who are in powerful positions, especially to people who want to run the free world or one who wants to continue to run the free world, to the task of truth telling. I agree with what you said, Barbara, and with what Judy said, that was not their role in this debate. They made that clear. They weren't going to be fact-checking during the debate. They did some of that afterwards, but I didn't like that. And I also agree that while journalists should not be the story, we really shouldn't care if they're truth-tellers who's moderating the debate. But this wasn't really a traditional debate. It was so different. And then to you say mute the candidates, I felt that in many ways also the moderators were pretty muted in what they could do.
Right. But what do you do when you have a candidate, Donald Trump, in this instance, we believe, spoke 53 times saying untruths? How do you clear up 53 lies?
That was Joe Biden's job, to hit that softball out of the park.
Yeah, and there were a lot of softballs. Yeah.
And there you go. Now we're on to the real topic that is sort of captivating the country.
And would you say that they were not in a role of journalists interviewing candidates, as you're pointing out, Dave? They were debate moderators, as Judy says, reading questions.
Yeah, the early spin from the Biden folks about what happened during Biden's debate performance, which was horrible, was to blame CNN for not fact-checking for the whole format when, in fact, the Biden people had agreed to the format. The tweets I saw as this debate was progressing was trying to find somebody else to blame, and there were early signs, the easy subject early on was CNN and the reporters. Obviously, that didn't stick because that wasn't the problem.
Quite a flip from, you know, the idea that CNN is a Democratic-leaning left, you know, media organization.
Right.
According to the right.
According to the right, yes. I mean, what's funny is that you actually heard Fox News commentators praising CNN for not stepping in. They were. Well, I have to say that they allowed the candidates to say what they will, which was an odd thing. You never hear anything good said on Fox.
Well, they only said it because it reflected well on them. Before the debate, Trump and his top people were anticipating an unfair, we're going into a rigged situation. They're going to be against us. So they were already set up to be ready to complain that they had been treated unfairly.
Now, the emerging content, the emerging commentary, let's say, among a lot of folks who track journalism, journalism critics, is that this has exposed a terrible failure by the American media, that we should have known before now that Joe Biden had been, let's say, mentally affected by his age, which was revealed by this. Is that a fair analysis? What do we think?
Yes.
Yes, I agree.
Absolutely. And I'm ashamed of myself as a journalist. I'm like, where have I been? I think Wall Street Journal had tried to point this out in the past. But the media, it makes it hard to say that we're not a left-leaning media because they were treating Biden with kid gloves. We should have suspected something when we all had such glee at his stellar performance at the State of the Union speech. And because we were so relieved and happy and, hey, this guy's still got it.
And because expectations had been so lowered.
But I was shocked, along with most of the viewers, most Americans, at how bad Biden was.
So let me challenge that just for the interesting notion of it. How would you go about doing that reporting? You know, Fox News isn't burdened by the responsibility of actually getting sources on the record. Fox News just says he doesn't know what he's doing. He's lost. Fox News has been saying this for years now. And so what do you do if you're a reporter on the White House beat? How do you actually find? You don't have access to the president's mental records.
But what about your observations?
Hmm.
You're a journalist. You're observing what the American people are observing and are worried about. What are they seeing that a journalist can't see?
I mean, it's not like we didn't raise the issue of the fact that he wasn't having press conferences, that he wasn't doing one-on-one serious interviews with serious journalists like from the New York Times or the Washington Post. Those items were being mentioned in the Wall Street Journal article about a month or 6 weeks ago that did raise these issues. There was criticism in the fact that it used a lot of unnamed sources and a lot of the sources were Republicans. But now you're seeing these sources come forward from both Republicans and Democrats. Whether or not this is something that's happened in the last few months, and surely it wasn't anything for us to look at. You know, people were saying, oh, the right is just exaggerating his foibles.
And there are good days and bad days when someone is old and facing some of the challenges that Biden is facing.
Absolutely.
No question about that. Vera Icarius Kelly on the Roundtable show on WAMC mentioned that her brothers in Germany are seeing apparently footage of Biden that we're not necessarily seeing in the United States, because they were saying to her, like, is this guy all right? This is before the debate. And she would say, yeah, I think so. And maybe they're seeing footage that we're not seeing.
You know, we did have a lot of commentary when Donald Trump took office from mental health professionals talking about how he exhibited all the traits of toxic narcissism. You know, and ordinarily mental health professionals don't do diagnoses from afar, but we did have that. Why didn't we see any of that on the part of mental health professionals, or let's just say aging professionals? One of the key elements that tests a person's mental capacity with the possibility of decline is gait, the way that a person walks. And, you know, when Joe Biden walked onto stage during that debate, that was very tough.
But we've seen that. We've seen that for a while now. And again, I go back to the American people have noticed that he's getting older. There's also a somewhat of a taboo about pushing too hard against someone who is older that, you know, we are going to see some of these things happen, but what does it really mean? So
ageism is something that we avoid, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that might be playing in there as well, but we all know that he's older, and we all know that while the right has been making issue of it, it has been mentioned in all the quote-unquote left-wing or mainstream media.
Well, as Judy points out that there hadn't been press conferences and interviews and things, but Judy, don't you think that the reporters then who weren't doing that needed to do more behind-the-scenes reporting on his condition? Like, why isn't this happening?
Yeah, that definitely would have helped. And again, the support staff was not helping at all either. I mean, they put him in a protective cocoon.
They won't release his medical records.
Let us consider, however, also what we have seen from the communitariat, the folks who do commentary. I guess we could include ourselves as little sub-communitariat folks. It's a big deal when you have the New York Times editorial board weighing in. It led an NPR newscast. The New York Times editorial board says Biden should not run. There was not any similar response when the Philadelphia Inquirer wrote that the focus should be on Donald Trump, who's been on the political stage for 8 years, it said, marked by chaos, corruption, and incivility. Why go back to that? All of this saying Trump should exit the stage. So are we overly focused on the disability that seems to be there of Joe Biden, and are we neglecting the elephant in the room of Donald Trump's evil?
Right. The press repeatedly got criticized whenever it brought up Biden's age. The mainstream media, if the New York Times, I mean, especially the New York Times, got criticized for any time it wrote anything about Joe Biden's age and his inability to do things. I mean, it was fairly relentless. But the debate performance was such a surprise. It was so off the charts. Donald Trump told a lot of lies, but was fairly lucid. I mean, he's never actually talked in complete sentences. It's true. But I could somewhat follow what he was saying. And again,
it's the energy.
And it's not like that hasn't been covered before, because it has. We've talked about it on the show. You know, we've even debated about whether or not citizens should be required to sit and listen to a whole 90-minute or two-hour Donald Trump speech, you know, for their own edification. So it's not like that hasn't been covered. That wasn't new. What was new to so many of us was that horrific debate performance by Joe Biden.
Now, what about truth? From John Alsop and CJR, I love this little line he uses. But many of Trump's answers were incoherent too, albeit in a different sense. And in some of the post-debate coverage, he seems to be deriving a dividend of sorts from being factually incoherent with brio, as opposed to being relatively honest while looking and sounding tired and confused.
Yeah, well put. He gets a benefit from just being who he is. And, you know, when you hear him at these rallies, he is incoherent.
So both the Philadelphia Inquirer, whose editorial I applaud, and the New York Times editorial, who I have some problems with, I think both of them just should have let off that new candidates are needed for both parties. Neither one is fit. And even if the Times later in its editorial, you know, tells how terrible Trump is and that we're not saying that Trump should be elected by any means, that should have been the lead to both of those.
But was that the news? I think Judy just made the point that we already know what Trump is. And he was himself again, lying as he always has. But the news was that we had this new window into Joe Biden that most of us hadn't thought was where he was in his age.
Yeah, there's a lot of uncertainties as we record this. But, you know, one of my questions is, would they do a September debate as planned?
Will that actually happen?
Right.
And if there is a change at the top of the Democratic ticket, which is being discussed in a lot of channels, will that lead to a debate, or will there not be a debate if, by chance, Donald Trump had to face Kamala Harris or someone else?
I'd also mention that among journalists, there's excitement when there's something new to cover and something unknown in news to jump into. And when you have the possibility of, at this stage, of Biden pulling out, then the coverage now is suddenly turning to all this excitement about who could replace him and what's the infighting going to be, what's the process going to be. And it just all seems so sudden that the media did fail, because we should have been there all along as catalysts for change as well as reporting the news. And now there's this glee of a horse race within the Democratic Party instead of what's going to be good for America.
And is this their ratcheting up effect of the press? In other words, this happens, the press starts reporting on it, speculation begins about who could replace, polls start to come out, more reporting, and that's going to influence the future decision, probably what the press does and how they cover it, what the president finally decides to do.
In a way, the press is the Heisenberg principle in effect.
Right.
The observation actually affects the data.
On some level, I think that's true.
Right. And I don't know how you avoid that.
I don't think you can.
Reporting the story. Yeah, it becomes a snowball. We'll have to see. I mean, obviously, we'll have to see. But I think you could have some sympathy for the Biden camp only in this. You can say that it feels to them, I'm sure, like a feeding frenzy, that once we start reporting this kind of stuff, how do you get away from reporting it more and then reporting the phenomenon, oh, now this other person has called for Biden to step aside?
When in some senses, we could say shame on the Biden administration for allowing it to get this far. If it is really this far, shame on you for allowing the country to be in such peril at this time and not do the right thing.
Well, there's one good thing that would come of this, and that is that because of this unsettling of the presidential race, there will probably have to be more spending on advertising. And let's hear it for the media. $10.7 billion is the forecast for political ad spending this year. About half of that will be for broadcast. This is the thing that happens every other year. Even numbered years, there is suddenly a surge in broadcast revenue, and every quadrennial presidential race, even more so. $10.7 billion.
Yeah, $3 billion of that or so is expected to go toward just the presidential race. Mm. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, I once talked to a man who ran a television station in Iowa, and he just loved presidential election years. But we should know that hardly any of this money will go to newspapers.
That's what I wrote in my note to you guys. What about newspapers?
Yeah, well.
a very effective way of advertising. It reaches a lot of people who actually do vote. And the other thing we should note is all the spending is coming from campaign contributions, that we often bemoan the high cost of campaigns and the influence donations make in political decisions. And so when this money flows into those broadcast stations, it's coming from somewhere, and there's a reason for it. So let's keep that in mind.
It'd be really great to have a fact-checking organization that pre-checked the ads, and they couldn't put them out unless they had more truth in it.
Aha. Uh-huh. Isn't there a mechanism by which you can complain about broadcast ads?
Sure, you can complain, but they also do check these ads. A lot of people will run stories about what's factual and what's not, but, you know, people are knee-jerk when they see this, and it's a way to rouse the party faithful to get out and vote, and it has nothing to do with informing anybody.
We could check on them, but if you were watching this instead of listening, you wouldn't see the wink. We check them, but it's a little loose.
Yeah, it's very hard to do. And of course, there is now misinformation, disinformation out there, which permeates the digital platforms.
And it's not random.
It's not random
anymore.
It's organized.
It's tied to your social media feed. They know who you are. They know you're an independent. They know if you're a purple or you're on the right or on the left.
So we would welcome your thoughts. This is The Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith, here with David Gustina and Barbara Lombardo and Judy Patrick. We are media, WAMC.org, if you want to email us your thoughts, and we're very happy to hear from you always. So let's just turn to some of the other stuff going on in the media. There are lawsuits for us to talk about. For one, Hunter Biden, the president's son, it has sued Fox News in New York. They did a 2022 miniseries that was a mock trial on imagined charges. And he is claiming that this inflicted emotional distress involved the sharing of intimate images in violation of the state revenge porn laws. So, you know, it is stunning to think, actually, that Fox News, which calls itself a news station, would even create a mock trial. I'm just stunned by the whole notion. I missed this, actually, when it came out.
Well, if you're going to solidify the Biden crime family theme, and you're a participant in that, the network's going to do whatever it can to make a nice, entertaining way to understand how evil Hunter Biden and the Biden family is.
You know, I must admit, I did not catch one single episode of this. But it's an interesting point, because Hunter Biden, I'm sure, is arguing the fact that he does not meet the threshold of a famous person or celebrity, and that perhaps his lawsuit will go forward and he has a chance of getting making some money out of Fox. As David Gustina knows, documentaries are a popular version or a popular format for the cable news networks to fill those Sunday nights and Saturday afternoons. But this one was a fictionalized version of
mockumentary.
And made a mockery of the truth.
Mockumentary. It's not exactly a classic like Best in Show, you know.
But isn't that the, you know, you mentioned the money. They've already been sued. Isn't that sad when an organization like Fox has so much money, they're willing to pay the fines and keep doing what they're doing?
Yes.
They're getting all that campaign money.
Well, they are. But it is interesting that after the record lawsuit settlement involving Dominion Voting System, $787 million, Fox has had to pay out plus some additional interest, and there hasn't been a noticeable change in their standards. The only thing that's changed is that Tucker Carlson is no longer on the airwaves there.
They basically doubled down. They've gone back to their old ways.
Mm-hmm. So this is why we say you can't go to work for Fox News if you're a journalist. Another lawsuit, a guy named Matthew Couch, who probably nobody here has heard of. He's the founder of something called DC Patriot, which is a news website, quote unquote. It's a right-wing platform.
You sure he didn't come out from under the couch?
Mr. Couch says he was defamed because of a Yahoo News podcast taking him to task for his writing about the murder of Seth Rich in Washington, D.C. Remember this? Seth Rich was a young Democratic National Committee staffer who was murdered in apparently a botched robbery. And the right wing, including Fox News, made a big deal out of claiming that, oh, he was murdered to cover up for Hillary Clinton. Others have, I think, made settlements with the Rich family. That is Mr. Rich's family. And now Couch is suing. The court has rejected this. An appeals court has said, no, your lawsuit does not have merit. They say they're going to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. I think this is an indication of the low standards that we now are seeing in a lot of the, especially the digital platforms that are out there that have partisan intent in what they do.
From what I read about his case or appeal, it didn't sound like he had a chance in heck, except that he's going to this current Supreme Court,
exactly.
And now who knows? I couldn't believe that he even thought that he had a case.
Yes, he said that he wanted $75 million in damages. He was also upset with Terry Gross, who's Fresh Air is heard here in WAMC. Fresh Air. And Mike Isikoff, a veteran reporter, the guy who, when working for Newsweek, did not get his story published about Whitewater. So he's now the chief investigative reporter for Yahoo News and a target here because he blew the whistle on the right-wing wackos claiming that Seth Rich was actually doing a cover.
And there's that institutional memory of yours, remembering how there was a constant barrage of stories about when President Bill Clinton was in office, about them having committed a number of murders.
Oh, yeah. It was amazing. The allegations about Hillary Clinton having something to do with the suicide of Vincent Foster, a tragic instance of someone on their staff, and how that was also part of a political cover-up. All of this stuff, again, goes to the corrupt right-wing journalistic ecosystem that unfortunately holds such sway in this country. I don't know what to do about that, actually.
Well, can I just tell you that I saw Jon Stewart on The Daily Show, and he made this very interesting argument, and he used real examples. He said, one of the last defenders of truth is the court system, Supreme Court aside for a moment, and that when former President Trump went around saying the election was stolen, in court they couldn't say that. They said it wasn't a fraud.
Ah.
So he looked at all the times Trump has said something in public and then in court has had to say the opposite. So the idea that it's one of the last places where you can see truth, the problem is most people only hear what he says outside the court.
Yeah, absolutely. Finally today, we need to talk about climate change because we are seeing evidence all around us of the devastating impact of it. And yet in journalism, we're not doing so well with that, apparently. A new study finds that writers for the climate-focused Substack called Heated, they have found that only 11% of the articles that they studied said that the main cause of most of the climate stories that we're writing about is human-induced climate change.
Right, and the shortcoming is that we tend to say that these were, or treat them as if they were acts of God or acts of Mother Nature, unpredictable acts of Mother Nature. And we just have a responsibility to repeat things over and over as needed. And that Heated study did provide some examples of news coverage, maybe it was the Washington Post, I think, where they, just by inserting a clause into your stories, a sentence that would re-explain it, you can easily plug that into a story, even if you're doing this basically the same sentence over and over, that repeats the causes of these weather phenomena.
And it's not just the weather that's the only aspect of talking about climate change. Right here at WAMC, we pepper lawmakers all the time with questions about infrastructure that needs to be improved. What about the fact that we're having all these migrants come? And it's not just because they're fleeing countries because of fear for their lives. It's because, and we're going to see more of this, because the climate is changing and they are not in livable areas of the world. So it's got to be connected to a lot of different subjects and news stories, not just the weather itself.
Right, and you can't use that as an excuse. Well, we've written about climate change. That alone is not sufficient.
Climate is a foreign affairs story. It is a domestic economy story. It is a weather story. There are many ways. By the way, this study found some places that deserve credit for doing very well: Agence France-Presse, Axios, BBC, Vox, and NPR. So how about that?
WAMC, let's face it.
All right, it's all good. All right, we are out of time for this episode of the Media Project episode. We say, let's not call it a show. Anyway, we are grateful to you folks for joining us. David Costino is here, Barbara Lombardo, Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith. We thank you for joining us this week, and we hope you will once again on the Media Project.
Look for episode 1727.
People, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the world.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, and Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustino. Thanks for listening.
Readers get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.